from Wisconsin Public Radio. We're going to start off with another episode from Infidel by the Crazy Dog Audio Theater. Roger Gregg is the guiding light and founder of the Crazy Dog Audio Theater. The first piece he sent me was called Time Out for Bill Lizard, and it was a silly detective story in which Roger did all the voices for the many characters in it, and there was no way you could tell they were all done by the same person. He was doing voiceover work in Ireland, and he had access to a lot of the very best voice actors and a number of other acting talent in the country. So when he formed the Crazy Dog Audio Theater, he had access to some of the very best voice people in the country, which is one of the reasons why all of the Crazy Dog work is so excellent. Great acting, and that's on top of good writing, terrific production, and all original music. So tonight we have episode 3 from Infidel, an historical tale about a British knight who tonight gets captured by the Saracens. This is episode 3, The Pawns Are Sacrificed. Infidel.
Down. Let's stay undercover.
Crazy Dog Audio Theatre presents Infidel by Roger Gregg. Our story of the knight Sir Hugh of Beauvais is based upon the actual events of the Fifth Crusade, which began in the year 1217. Episode 3, The Pawns Are Sacrificed.
The fighting has stopped. The sun goes down, and we wait. You and I will be safe up here, hiding on the ridge. No, they can't be certain we escaped. We'll cross the lines before dawn. What? Yes. It gets cold in the desert at night. Here. Let me take your cloak. I must keep warm, and I must keep watch over us. I'll get you back. Don't worry. I'll get you back. Get us back.
Yield, little brother.
What?
Pledge yourself.
I have.
Will Philip's brother prove as noble?
Is he too a soldier for Christ?
I am.
You're not like your brother.
I'm not.
It's in your eyes.
What is?
False doctrines are but another sign of what must come to pass.
No. No signs.
In here, move!
It does not matter what tongues we speak.
Here is the Christian prisoner, my Sultan.
Very good.
Or the symbols we wave. What matters is
the men who face each other.
Face us! I said turn and face the Sultan, you dog!
Enough, Mashtoop. I see him.
How much longer, Al-Kamil, must we sit back and let these blue-eyed devils destroy our country?
Mashtoob, we shall take one step at a time, with God's mercy.
It is not good enough. For 1.5 years, we have fought to free Damietta from the invaders. And look what has happened. They have taken the town and massacred everyone. The streets are soaked in the blood of our women and children. God, curse the day they first set foot on our soil! Murderers!
Please, Mashtub! Allah will strengthen us. You will see. Our time will come.
Our time is now.
Look, my cousin. See? Just as upon this chessboard, the invaders have finally taken Damietta. And soon, in their arrogance, they will come looking for us in the desert, thinking they are chasing a fleeing rabbit. But by then, the Kurds, the Syrians, the Palestinians, even the Arab nomads will have joined us. It is no rabbit they will find, but the mighty lion of Islam, which will slay the infidel and leave them to rot on the desert sands.
God's chosen people cry out for some kind of vengeance. Let us take our Christian prisoners and behead them.
No! They are of more value to us, alive than dead.
Then at least execute this murdering Templar.
What Templar?
This one here, the one we captured outside Damietta.
He is no Templar.
He was wearing this Templar's medallion.
Mashtub, were he a Templar, he would say so, as all the others have in the past. They vow never to deny the cross of their brotherhood. Why should this one be different?
Perhaps he has taken no such vows.
If he hasn't taken the vows of a Templar, how can he be one?
These are the tricks with words your philosophers teach. He is obviously a coward who cannot face that.
We shall see.
Just show him the medallion and see how he reacts. You will see. His kind think nothing of lying. They have no notion of sin. Fidel, get up. Kneel in the presence of the Sultan.
Enough, Mashtub. Stop it. Leave him be.
You may stand up. Please. Please, stand up.
Why do you speak to him in his own language?
How else is he going to understand?
What is your name?
Hugh.
Hugh?
Of Beauvais.
Oh. You are a knight?
Yes.
What did he say?
Quiet, Mashtub.
Who do you serve?
Serve? I don't know.
Water?
Yes.
You would like some water?
Yes. Yes.
Very well. Mashtub, bring me the water.
What? You would let this animal drink from your cup?
Mashtub!
He is one of the butchers of Damietta!
Mashtub!
You cannot feed this animal!
Do as I say, Mashtub!
Very well, Sultan. But this is not right!
Here, drink this.
Good, isn't it? I have snow brought from the mountains to cool the water. Now, once more I ask you, who do you serve?
A bishop.
A bishop?
What does he say?
He says he serves in the army of a bishop.
He is lying! Sultan!
I will be the charge of that, Mashtub. Wait outside.
Very well, Al-Malik Al-Kamil, but say the word and this animal dies.
What do you think this is?
A medallion.
Yes, I know it is a medallion. What symbol is on it?
The Templars.
Two knights on the one horse. You were wearing this when you were captured. Why? Why do you wear their symbol?
It was given to me.
Given to you?
By a Templar.
This Templar? He is your friend?
No.
No? He gives you a gift, you accept, and yet he is not your friend?
I find this difficult to believe.
I took the water from you.
Yes.
Yes, you did, didn't you? So, you are not a Templar.
I am a simple knight.
Simple knight? No. There is something different about you. Tell me, can you read and write?
Yes.
You can.
Isn't this unusual for a Christian knight?
I am the younger of two brothers, so I was sent to the monastery to study.
You barbarians are very strange. The younger sons, those without power, are sent to monasteries to learn to read and write, while those who sit on your thrones can barely spell their own names. This is ignorant folly. Do you agree?
There are many ignorant men sitting on thrones.
Yes. Yes, there are. Here, simple knight. See if you can read a passage from this. It is in your language.
Then the Lord said, Enough, Abraham. Do not lay your hand on the boy. I know you love me as you do not withhold from me your only son.
Enough! You can read.
I said I could.
I put my faith in what one does, not what one says.
Then you are wise.
Master, bring me my youngest son. As you can see, I have learned to speak your language. I think it is very important to know the tongue of your enemy. It often proves a great advantage. I wish also that my son should learn your language. Will you teach him?
I don't know if I can.
In return, you may dine at my table, and your life will be spared.
I have no choice, then.
Excellent. I knew you would agree. You strike me as a sensible man who values life, especially his own. Simple knight. Do you play chess?
Yes.
Excellent, excellent. Then play chess with my son. He is very good. Teach him your language over the games you play. He is still young and very restless, and like most students, if he thought he was supposed to be learning something, he would soon be bored. But if it appears to him to be a tournament of chess with a pagan knight as a challenger, he will prove very enthusiastic.
I understand.
Excellent.
Father! You have sent for me. Dr. Zahir says that I have worked enough today. He says that I should...
Omar, this is Sir Hugh of Beauvais.
An infidel.
Very perceptive, Omar. Would you like to know why he is here?
Yes.
He is here to challenge you to a tournament of chess.
Me?
Yes, you. Do you accept?
Oh, yes, yes.
Excellent. My son says he accepts your challenge.
Good.
Good.
Excellent. You see? Progress already. Simple knight, I will have you released from your chains.
Blessed are the merciful, for they shall obtain mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart,
verses,
for they shall see God.
Verses.
Blessed are the peacemakers,
verses,
for they shall be called the children of God.
It's funny. When I was first captured, those verses Mother taught us kept spinning round and round in my head. I couldn't shake them off. All those months playing chess. It's funny.
Blessed are the peacemakers.
Isn't it? Those early memories.
Aha! You are not watching.
Coming back to me.
My knight takes... your queen.
Hugh, it is your move.
I know it's my move.
Well, then move.
Don't rush me.
Rush me?
I've explained rush before. It's when you try to make somebody go too fast.
Oh, but you do not go too fast. You go too slow.
Go away and let me concentrate. Go on. Oh,
very well. But I already know what move you're going to make.
What move am I going to make?
I cannot tell you. You are my opponent.
You are trying to confuse me.
No, I am not.
Shh. Let me concentrate.
Hugh?
What?
Have you ever seen such a sword as this?
What sword is that?
This one. From the sword rack here. You see?
Hey! Hey! Put that down! Give it here!
Hey, come now, give it back! This is my sword!
Your sword, eh? Come and get it then. Yield, my friend!
Yes, I yield.
Here, give me your hand.
Hugh, teach me how to use this sword.
No! Stop asking me!
There must be a...
technique.
Yes, a technique for a blade so heavy.
It is very heavy, Omar, because this is a Saragossa. This is a Templar sword.
No, it is a Muslim sword.
No, it's not. It's a Templar sword.
No, it is a Muslim sword. My father gave money for this sword.
Your father paid for this sword?
Oh, yes. He paid for many, many swords.
Who did he buy it from? Who did he give money to for the sword?
Oh, the Venetians.
Wonderful!
They are always in Egypt. They bring many good swords and arrows to...
Sell,
yes. My father says Islam has better bows, horses, and fire weapons, but the Venetian merchants, they bring many good swords and arrows to sell. Why, do you know them?
Yes, Omar. We too bought all our weapons from the Venetians. These merchants grow rich from our wars.
I see. This is bad.
Yes, this is bad.
God will punish.
He's certainly taking his time about it.
No, he will, Hugh. In a book, Holy to Islam, it is said, God will judge all nations. The swords, they must become...
plowshares?
Yes, you have read this then.
Yes.
These are the words of one of the prophets.
Well, wait a minute. Yesterday you told me you worshipped only Muhammad.
I did not.
Yes, you did.
I told you yesterday we worshipped only God. God only. Muhammad is the prophet of God. Allah's prophet, the prophet. But yes, before Muhammad, there were many other prophets. Moses, Jacob, Jesus.
Jesus? You believe in Jesus?
We believe that Jesus, peace be upon him, was very close to God. A prophet, but not the prophet. You understand?
I think so.
You have heard, he who lives by the sword...
dies by the sword.
Good. And to a Muslim, these are the words of Jesus the prophet. But to you, these are the words of Jesus the God. Now do you understand?
Those are his words, whatever we call him.
Here. I wish you please show me how Christian knights use their swords.
No. Stop.
I know many things of bows and arrows, but...
No. Stop asking me. Your father will kill me, Omar.
No, he would not. It is all right. It is best that I learn this, yes?
All right. Okay. Now, there are three things everyone should know about using a sword.
Yes.
There is the length, the weight, and the sharpness. Now, the best length of the sword is determined by the stature of the knight.
Stature?
How tall the knight is. You see, a tall, incredibly handsome knight, like me, would use a tall and handsome sword. such as this.
A short knight would use a short sword.
Exactly. So you use your sword to beat down your opponent.
And after you beat them down, you use a dagger to cut their throat.
Yes.
What is all this, Doc?
Hey, Dr. Zahir.
Omar, put that sword down.
Yes, Doctor.
There is a madman in camp. One of your so-called Christian holy men, a preacher, I believe. Allah preserve us from such fanatic holy men.
Why is he here?
Only to stop the war.
Stop the war?
Oh, yes. This madman has walked across the desert, over the battle lines, and straight into our camp, wearing nothing but rags and carrying nothing, not even a cross. He says he is the little brother of everyone.
A brother? Was his name Francis?
I do not know, but you will find out. The Sultan wishes you to attend when he interrogates this madman.
He wants me there?
Apparently he wants your opinion. Come, come, follow me.
The world seemed to stop that night.
Blessed are the merciful.
And a window opened.
Are you a soldier for Christ?
And for a split second.
Live by the sword?
I caught a glimpse.
Die by the sword.
Which undermines everything.
You're not like your brother.
You were taught to believe. Your eyes open.
It's in your eyes.
And for the first time you see.
They're hungry. They've lost everything.
The truth.
Blessed are
the peacemakers.
For they shall be called
the children of God.
Ah! Sir Hugh of Beauvais.
We've been waiting for you, simple knight. I understand that my young son is making excellent progress learning your language.
He is getting there, Sultan.
Excellent. I am told also that he is learning other things besides your language, such as sword technique.
It is to my advantage to know such things, Father.
And Omar is my friend.
Your friend? How can you be a friend to your enemy?
Stop being enemies?
You Christians are a very strange people.
All is ready, Amalik al-Kamil.
Very well. And the ordeal?
We shall have him walk on the holy cross the prisoner wears on his tunic. The blessed cross is the symbol most holy to them.
Yes. Please, forgive us, Sir Hugh, but it is customary to subject our guests to certain ordeals.
What ordeals?
This madman is said to be holy, and we wish to test this. The cross on your tunic, it is blessed?
By my bishop, yes.
Excellent. May we have it, please?
Yes. Here, let me take it off. Here.
Thank you. Now, we will place it on the ground like this. And see if this holy man walks on it.
Tramples on the cross? But that's a sin.
But if he is truly holy, he won't. Instead, he will offend me and die for his faith. Mashtub, bring in this madman.
Yes, my sultan.
Guards, bring him in.
I had seen this man before on the ship to Egypt. He wasn't like the other holy men I had heard preaching in their robes and finery. All they spoke of was the Bible prophecies and killing infidels and our holy war. But this man was different. He came in and walked right up to the Sultan and bowed. He stood on the cross.
Hugh, your holy man blasphemes.
Little brother, you have denied your faith in your Jesus.
No, he said.
Oh, but you have. In approaching me, you have defiled the holy sign of your cross. You see? You tread on it even now.
All I see is a symbol on the floor, he said. Nothing else.
But this is the symbol of your Jesus. Peace be upon him.
He said, what is really under my feet is a piece of red cloth sewn onto a piece of white cloth.
You are not a saint, then?
No, he said. I am a man, like you.
Like me? Oh, no. I respect these holy symbols of our faith. That is why we...
Kill each other?
Why, we are at war.
I am not at war, he said.
Not at war? He is mad. This is a madman.
I am not at war, he says.
And he laughed and laughed until he asked, Sultan, do you have children?
Yes, many.
I am his son, madman.
That is my youngest. He's impetuous.
Suppose, to show how much you loved your son, you had a huge symbol, a minaret tower of gold put up with your son's name spelt out in precious diamonds around the top. Such a symbol would be...
Precious, a testament of love beyond price.
Indeed. And if one day you heard that your son here was dying of hunger, where would you send food? To your precious symbol or to your son?
To my son, of course.
And if you had no money to buy food?
Well, then I would tear out the diamonds and melt the tower.
Destroy the priceless symbol of your love?
Of course. A good father loves his children.
We are all his children, great Sultan. Are we not?
Yes. Yes, we are. Brother.
A madman in rags. He stayed for a few days and then left, walking barefoot across the desert. Why was he even allowed to come? The last thing the generals wanted was peace. He wasn't gonna weep before the cardinal ordered a new attack. And the holy war's great killing machine began again. Yes. Yes. It's almost time now. It's getting light. It's time to move. Come on. Come on. I'll get you home. I'll get you home.
You have been listening to episode 3 of Infidel by Roger Gregg. Starring Anthony Brophy, David Murray, Morgan Jones, Paul B. Lennox, Dermot McGuinness, Raymond Keane, Roger Gregg, Georgina Miller, Louis Gregg, Isaac Jones, and Aidan Vaughan. Studio and location recording by Mark McGrath. Location recordings at Raleigh House, Macroom, County Cork. Infidel was written, directed and produced by Roger Gregg.
That was episode 3 of Infidel. We'll have episode 4, the finale, next week here on Sound Effects. In its earlier days, the Crazy Dog Audio Theater did a lot more with the Irish sense of humor. Then they had a period in which they delved into Irish cultural history and mythology. So this piece, which is pretty much historical tale altogether, is unusual for them. Roger Gregg now teaches at the Gaiety School of Acting in Dublin, Ireland. Let's take this pause for station identification, if you don't mind.
And this is Community Radio. It's KFAI 90.3 FM in Minneapolis and St. Paul, online and archived at kfai.org. Sure, take a deep breath, have another hit of fresh air.
for this train of thought is Sound Effects, a Radio Playground, here on KFAI Community Radio.
Ah, and here we are again. I'm Jerry Stearns, and tonight on the rest of Sound Effects, we have another episode of A Canticle for Leibowitz, produced by Wisconsin Public Radio in conjunction with National Public Radio. In tonight's episode, the scholar Thon Tadeo philosophizes about the many documents that they have found that were saved and hidden away by St. Leibowitz. And then a poet mentions that humankind seems to be entering another intellectual revolution, and he predicts that this will not come to a good end. So here is episode 10 of A Canticle for Leibowitz by Walter M. Miller, Jr.
A Canticle for Leibowitz.
Alleluia, alleluia.
Part 10 of a series in 15 parts, adapted from a novel by Walter Miller, Jr. Canticle for Leibowitz. Here continues the chronicle, set down daily by the brethren of Isaac Edward Leibowitz, in their abbey in the desert of the Southwest. Quote, in the year of our Lord 3174, King Hannigan of Texarkana, ever zealous of his own increase, schemed to conquer the realms of Denver and Laredo. Moreover, he yearned to bring under his yoke the warrior tribes of the Great Plains, and this might he only do if they were made weak. Therefore, he diseased their cattle, for he was a cunning man. Now in that same year there came unto our abbey the king's cousin, Don Tadeo, a mighty sage. He came that he might read our ancient texts, yea, very ancient, for we had held them safe 1,200 years, since the time of the flame deluge. Don Tadeo hoped to read our books, learn the ancient skills, and profit therefrom. Now this Don Tadeo had come unto the abbey, attended by men-at-arms, that he might travel safely. And these soldiers did make in secret drawings of our walls and fortifications, that they might propose later unto the king that he take our abbey for himself, and make of it a mighty fortress for his wars. They hoped that none would see them make these drawings. But the poet saw them, he who lived at that time in the guest house. And the poet told the abbot. Unquote.
One night, Abbot Paolo made a feast at high table for Tadeo and the military officers. When supper was done, Tadeo was to speak about his work and that of other scientists. Candlelight blanched the faces of the robed monks, who stood motionless behind their stools and waited for the beginning of the evening meal. The abbot made an announcement.
The rule of abstinence for today is dispensed at tonight's meal. We shall have guests, as you may have heard. All religious may partake of tonight's banquet in honor of Don Tadeo and his group. You may eat meat. And conversation, if you'll keep it quiet, will be permitted during the meal.
The abbot glanced at the table set for himself, Father Galt, the honored guest, and his party.
Bad arithmetic in the kitchen again.
8 places had been set.
3 officers, the Don and his assistant, 2 of us, that makes 7.
Paolo took his place at the table. Glanced toward the entrance.
Father Galt should be bringing them in.
Previously, the visitors' meals had been served in the guest house rather than the refectory to avoid subjecting them to the austerity of the monk's own frugal fare. When the guests came, Paolo counted again. Still 7.
Why the 8th place setting, Father Galt?
Search me, my lord.
Tadeo filled the place on the abbot's right, and the others fell in toward the foot of the table. leaving the place on Paolo's left empty. During the blessing, someone slipped quietly into the seat on the abbot's left.
Amen. Sedete.
The abbot glanced sharply at the figure.
Poet.
Oh, good evening, sir. Good learned Don, distinguished hosts. Oh, now what are we having tonight here? Roast fish and honeycombs in honor of the temporal resurrection that's upon us.
Oh, dear God.
Or have you, my lord abbot, finally cooked the goose of the mayor of the village?
May I remind the poet.
Such culinary excellence one enjoys in this place, Don Tadeo. Yes, I. You should join us more often. I do hope Brother Chef has his usual gusto tonight, his inward flame, his enchanted touch. Perhaps we shall have his inspired mock pork with maize a la Friar John.
That sounds interesting. What is it?
Greased armadillo with parched corn boiled in donkey milk. It's a regular Sunday special.
Poet, I apologize for his presence, Don Tadeo. He was not invited.
My Lord Anakin, too, keeps several court fools. I'm familiar with the species. You needn't apologize for him.
Allow me instead to apologize for the abbot, sire. Well, mind you, I suppose you'd be right not to accept my apology for him.
Poet, before I throw you out, let's probe the depths of your own
imagination. Oh, it's pretty deep, all right.
Apologize on behalf of my Lord Abbot. But apologize.
Drop it, Father Galt. Drop it.
Oh, that's all right, my lord. I don't mind apologizing for you in the least. You apologize for me, I apologize for you. And isn't that a fitting maneuver in charity and goodwill? Nobody need apologize for himself, which is always so humiliating. If you would but allow me to serve as your humble helper, my lord, you would never have to eat your own crow. For example, I might apologize to important guests for the existence of bedbugs, and to bedbugs for the abrupt change of fare. Well, I would assume all the blame for you, of course. It's a fine system, one I was prepared to make available to you too, most eminent scholar. My system of negotiable and transferable apologetics would have been of particular value to you, Don Tadeo.
Who would have been of value to me?
Oh, yes, it's such a pity. Somebody stole my blue-headed goat.
Blue-headed goat?
Oh, he had a head as bald as Hannigan's, your brilliance, and blue as the tip of Brother Armbruster's nose. I meant to make you a present of the animal, but some dastards filched him before you came.
Do we need a blue-headed goat? I wasn't aware we had a pressing need for a blue-headed goat.
But the need is obvious. They say you're writing equations that will one day remake the world. They say a new light is dawning. If there's to be light, then somebody will have to be blamed for the darkness that's past.
Ah, thence the goat. A sickly jest, Abbot Paolo. Is he the best you can do?
You'll notice he's unemployed.
No.
Let us talk of something
sensible.
You
mistake my meaning, your brilliance. The goat is to be enshrined and honored, not blamed. Crown him with the crown St. Leibowitz sent you, and thank him for the light that's rising. Then blame Leibowitz and drive him into the desert. That way you won't have to wear the second crown. The one with thorns. Responsibility, it's called. And when your patron's army comes to seize this abbey, the goat can be placed in the courtyard, taught how to bleat. There's been nobody here but me. Nobody here but me. Whenever a stranger comes by.
Why, you...
Captain Dursard.
Ah, the captain's a fighter as well as a draftsman. Your sketches of the abbey's defenses show much promise of artistic growth. I predict one day your drawing of the underwall tunnels will be hung in a museum of fine art.
Captain Josard, you will kindly sit down.
Let me
now!
No.
You, poet, will excuse yourself from table. Now.
Oh, well, if I must, I must. But never let it be said that a poet abdicated his responsibilities. Vigilance, your brilliance, eternal vigilance. I shall leave my glass eye here on the table as a sort of substitute scrutineer. Oh, good evening, my lords.
Colonel, I suggest you and the lieutenant take Captain Josard back to his quarters and sit on him till he cools off.
At once, sir. Yes, sir.
I'm sorry, Don Paolo, and deeply ashamed that such a thing could have come about.
No, no, it is my fault. I should have had the poet thrown out as soon as he showed up. He provoked the whole thing, and I failed to stop it. The provocation was clear.
Provocation by the fanciful lie of a vagrant fool? Josard reacted as if the poet's charges were true.
Oh, then you don't know that your soldiers are preparing a report on the military value of our abbey?
What? Can this be true?
Yes.
And you've permitted us to stay?
We keep no secrets here. Your companions are welcome to make such a study if they wish. I would not presume to ask why they want the information. The poet's assumption, of course, was merest fancy.
Of course.
Surely your prince has no aggressive ambitions.
Surely not.
And even if he did, I'm sure he would have the wisdom, or at least the wise counselors, to lead him to understand that our abbey's value as a storehouse of knowledge is greater than its value as a fortress.
Father Abbot, we'll speak of this again before I leave.
A pall had fallen on the banquet, but it began to lift during the group singing in the courtyard after the meal. So when the time came for the scholar's lecture in the great hall, embarrassment seemed to have ended. Paolo led Taddeo to the lectern.
My Lord Abbot, Reverend Fathers and Brothers, I have been amazed at what we have found here. A few weeks ago, I would not have believed, did not believe, that documents such as you have in your memorabilia could exist. It's still hard to believe. For example, here is a quotation I found downstairs from a four-page fragment of a book which may have been an advanced physics text. A few of you may have seen it. Quote, "If the space terms predominate in the expression for the interval between event points, the interval is said to be space-like, since it's then possible to select a coordinate system in which the events appear simultaneous and therefore separated only spatially. If, however, the interval is time-like, the events cannot be simultaneous in any coordinate system, but there exists a coordinate system in which the space terms will vanish entirely, so that the separation between events will be purely temporal, id est, occurring at the same place, but at different times." Has anyone here looked at that reference lately? Anyone ever remember seeing it? Anyone know what it means? It's followed by a page and a half of mathematics, which I won't try to read. But it treats some of our fundamental concepts as if they weren't basic at all, but evanescent appearances that change according to one's point of view. It ends with the word therefore, and the rest of the page is burned, and the conclusion with it. The reasoning is impeccable, however, and the mathematics quite elegant, so I can write the conclusion myself. Brothers, it seems the conclusion of a madman. It began with assumptions, however, which appeared equally mad. Now, this is only one example of the many enigmas posed by these papers you've kept so long, papers describing systems which touch our experience nowhere. Were they within reach of the ancients? Certain references tend to indicate it. One paper refers to elemental transmutation, which we just recently established as theoretically impossible. And then it says, experiment proves. But how? It may take generations to understand some of these things. I'm sure you realize your present facilities are inadequate, not to mention inaccessible to the rest of the world. However, that problem isn't what you asked me to talk about this evening. I merely mention it because it's been so fortunate for me to have access to your materials. Now, one of my current preoccupations is the nature of light.
particularly its refrangibility, its bendability, breakability. And some of your texts are proving very helpful. By the way, I hope none of this offends anybody's religious beliefs.
Why?
I beg your pardon?
Why?
Why, Abbot Paulo?
What is there about the refrangible property of light that you thought might be offensive to religion?
Well, Monsignor Apollo, whom you know, grew quite heated on the subject. He said that light could not possibly have been refrangible before the flood because the rainbow was supposedly...
Monsignor Apollo is a good man, Don Taddeo, a good priest, but all men are apt to be incredible asses at times, especially outside their domains. I'm sorry I asked the question.
The answer relieves me, my lord abbot. I seek no quarrels. Well, if there are no further questions, perhaps I should spend a moment telling you a little about the Collegium. I must say, the picture, as I see it, seems very encouraging. We're flooded with applicants who want to study with us. In fact, the Collegium is assuming an educational function as well as an investigative one. Interest in natural science is on the increase, and our work is being liberally endowed. These are symptoms of revival and renaissance. A very widespread renaissance. Studies are being undertaken in many fields. Now, to mention a few, Don Vich Morton, investigating the possibilities for the artificial production of ice. Don Frieder Halb, seeking to transmit messages by electrical variations along a wire. And in addition to these studies, Don Menoma is heading a project which seeks further information about the origin of the human species. Now, since this is primarily an archaeological task, he asked me to search your library for any suggestive material on the subject. However, perhaps I'd better not dwell on this at any length, since it's tending to cause controversy among the theologians. But if there are any questions, yes.
Sir, I was wondering if you were acquainted with the suggestions of St. Augustine on that subject.
I am not.
He was a 4th century bishop and philosopher. He suggested that in the beginning, God created all things in their germinal causes, including the physiology of man, and that the germinal causes inseminate, as it were, the formless matter, which then gradually evolved into the more complex shapes, and eventually man. Has this hypothesis been considered?
I'm afraid it has not, but I shall look it up.
Thank you.
Now, perhaps the most daring research of all is being conducted by my friend Don Esser Schon. It is an attempt to synthesize living matter. Don Esser hopes to create living protoplasm using only 6 basic ingredients. Now, this work could lead to... You have a question, Brother Armbruster?
If you would do an old man the kindness, this Don Esser Schon, who limits himself to, what is it, 6 basic ingredients? I was wondering, are they permitting him to use both hands?
Why, I...
May I also inquire whether this remarkable feat is to be performed from the sitting or standing or prone position, or perhaps on horseback while playing 2 trumpets?
Brother Armbruster, you have been warned. You are excommunicated from the common table until you make satisfaction. You may wait in the chapel.
Yes, my lord. Yes, well, so much for that. In conclusion, a brief outline of what the world can expect, in my opinion, from the intellectual revolution just beginning. Ignorance has been our king. Tomorrow, a new prince shall rule. Men of science shall stand behind his throne, and the universe will come to know his might. His name is Truth. His empire shall encompass the earth,
and the mastery of man over the earth shall be renewed. A century from now, men will fly through the air in mechanical birds. There will be buildings of 30 stories, ships that go under the sea, machines to perform all works. And how will this come to pass? In the same way, all change comes to pass. I fear it will come by violence and upheaval, by flame, by fury. For no change comes calmly over the world. It will be so. We do not will it so. Ignorance is king. Many would not profit by his abdication. Many enrich themselves by means of his dark monarchy. They are his court, and in his name they defraud and govern, enrich themselves and perpetuate their power. Even literacy they fear, for the written word is another channel of communication that might cause their enemies to become united. Their weapons are keen-honed. They use them with skill. They will press the battle upon the world when their interests are threatened. And the violence which follows will last until the structure of society as it now exists is leveled to rubble and a new society emerges. I am sorry, but that is how I see it.
The words brought a new pall over the room. Paolo's hopes sank. It seemed Taddeo knew the military ambitions of Hannigan. He had a choice: to approve them, disapprove them, or to regard them as impersonal phenomena beyond his control. Evidently, he accepted them as inevitable.
How can he escape his own conscience and disavow responsibility?
But then the words came back to him.
For in those days, the Lord God had suffered the wise men to know the means by which the world itself might be destroyed.
He had also suffered them to know how it might be saved, and as always, let them choose for themselves. And perhaps they had chosen as Taddeo was choosing, to wash their hands before the multitude. There was silence. Half the community was staring toward the entrance.
Father Galt? What is it?
An old man with a beard and shawl, my lord. It looks like... No. He wouldn't come here.
Benjamin?
The figure stirred. It drew its shawl tighter about spindly shoulders and walked slowly into the light. It stopped again, muttering to itself as it looked around the room. Then, leaning on a crooked staff, the old apparition moved slowly toward the lectern, never taking its eyes from Taddeo, who, when no one stirred or spoke, grew pale as the decrepit vision approached. The face of that bearded antiquity blazed with hopeful ferocity. His eyes twitched over Taddeo. His mouth quivered and smiled. He reached out one trembling hand toward the scholar and stared hopefully into the scholar's eyes. Then a great sigh as hope vanished. The knowing smirk of the old Jew of the mountain spread over his face. He turned, faced the community, spread his hands, and shrugged.
It's still not him.
episode 10 of A Canticle for Leibowitz. It was Carl Schmidt of WHA Public Radio in Madison, Wisconsin, who originally came up with the idea of doing Walter Miller's novel for radio. He actually read it on the air during the 1960s for his audiences on Wisconsin Public Radio. During the 1970s, he was instrumental in forming Earplay, which was a award-winning series of audio dramas in conjunction with NPR and the National Endowment for the Arts. By the end of that decade, in 1979, they won a Prix Italia Award for excellence in audio drama. And by that time, I think he felt he had enough expertise in the field to do justice to the novel he wanted to do. And his dream was realized when National Public Radio picked up the series he'd created in 1982. So it was nearly 20 years from the time he first read the novel on the air till the time he put his radio adaptation on the air. And then it was 20 years later, in 2001, when NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio reissued the series. And that's what we're listening to now, the reissue on the 5-CD set. We'll have episode 11 next week here on Sound Effects of Radio Playground. I'm Jerry Stearns, and if you'd like to contact me about this show, this series, or make a suggestion or a request of something you'd like to hear on the radio, you can write to me at soundeffects@greatnorthernaudio.com. Sound Effects is one word and has an A on effects. soundeffects@greatnorthernaudio.com. Well, here we are at the end of another show tonight. Hope you'll stick around. Abby's Room for One is coming up next, and there's nothing much historical about it at all. Join us again next week for more modern audio theater and comedy on Sound Effects, a Radio Playground, here on Fresh Air Radio.
Support for KFEI comes in part from the Cedar Cultural Center, presenting Sun Lux, Wednesday, September 2nd. Sun Lux strives to question assumptions about how music is made and construct their own from a molecular level, cultivating a musical language rooted in curiosity and balancing opposites. Their music is a genre-melting pot of jazz and rock essentials with electronics, alternative, and classical elements, blended to create an engaging listener experience. More information about Sun Lux is available at thecedar.org.
Programming on KFAI is supported by Linval Jackson and GSC, presenting the Pondy River Reggae Boat Ride on Saturday, September 5th, with the International Reggae All-Stars, featuring Linval Jackson, DJs Muscleman, Diffusion Sound, and Marco T, spinning reggae, dancehall, soca, hip-hop, and afrobeats. The Pondy River Reggae Boat Ride departs from Harriet Island, St. Paul at 6:30 p.m. on Saturday, September 5th. Event information is available at Guyam Grocery on North Lindale Avenue or by phone at 612-522-9222. Information is also available at 876 Yardie Catering at 1-8-7-6 YardieCatering at gmail.com.
In recognition of the freedom of speech protections on the First Amendment and the FCC's relaxed policy on late night and overnight language, this KFAI program may include song lyrics that some listeners might find objectionable. Listener discretion is advised.
You can't always get what you want, but you try sometimes. You get what you need.
You are listening to Fresh Air Community Radio, 90.3 FM Minneapolis, going out to the stratosphere, or on the web at www.kfai.org, where you can catch this train wreck for the next 2 weeks. It's archived. This is Abby's Room for One Radio. You're at the end of your week, or the beginning of the next one, or somewhere in the middle, because our work weeks never end. But rock, well, that never dies. Here's some stuff. She hasn't got a heart and she hasn't got a soul. Say that she has got the heart of one. But I'm a rebel even when I never could retrieve her. If we have to believe her right now. But when the time has come to go, I truly lost my dad. I'm always born and gone until I'm growing up. There's only room for one. There's only room for one. There's only room for one. And it's always her. And yeah, it's always